was a kid, I used to stare out the car window and pretend that I was flying.
We're going to try this, and it might actually work this time. Like glitch after glitch after glitch after glitch after glitch after glitch. Hey, this is Jasper with Where the Sidewalk Ends. I'm your host today. This is episode 62 for the year 2023. What do my buddies say? That's like one every 5 days. I'm trying to shorten that gap even more, so that's kind of cool. It's kind of cool. I mean, just for a guy who, like, you know, I mean, I'm not, you guys ain't paying me enough. You ain't subscribing enough to, like, make a living for me out of this yet, but maybe one day, and maybe not, but I don't really care. I do this for me. I like it. I love it. I like doing it, and, you know, some of these episodes are better than others, for sure. Maybe none of them are that good, but they're not that bad either. So, but I'm reading Mike Dooley's book, Infinite Possibilities, The Art of Living Your Dreams. And we already went through the preface and we went through the introduction. And check it out. Thoughts become things. Let us start from the beginning. At the center of your being, you have the answers. You know who you are. You know what you want. What do you think of that? Shall I introduce myself? I am Jasper, your host of Where the Sidewalk Ends, the unconventional podcast that's predictably unpredictable. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Reading Mike Dooley's book, Infinite Possibilities, The Art of Living Your Dreams. This is a book that I had received in Key West in 2015 from my PIP tribe, Possibilities in Paradise. Very wonderful, magical, and transforming experience. We already started off, and I read the preface yesterday and the introduction, and I'm going to start with chapter one here today. And before I even do that, let's just talk about ADD for a minute. So I was in the middle of The Game of Life and How to Play It by Florence Scovel Shinn, a book written in 1925, a new age thinker of our times, whose information is as relevant today as it was back then. What's interesting is that it's like most of the books that I start to read, I stop and veer off and find another book and read that too, and because there's so much wonderful information that I'd like to read about and bring to you so that, you know, you can up your game, you can download the information or upload it, and, you know, whatever you got to do, take it in, renew your mind, because really you do not want to conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And that's what all these readings and stuff are. They're renewing your mind. Like, you ever like, you know, you're sitting there with your friends or somebody and you're talking to them and just like peace comes over you and you're like, you got everything figured out. The whole world's figured out. Like, you've never been so smart in your life. Like, you're just like, yep, yep. And you like know what you're going to do tomorrow and the next day and the next 30 years. You're like, you got it all figured out. And you go to sleep that night. Whenever the hell it is, and you wake up the next day and you're like, what the, like, you might just, like, everything's cloudy, everything's foggy, like, you just like barely trying to, you know, you just want to get your shoes on and get something to eat and start your day out, and you got all kinds of other shit going on, and it's like, how does that happen? Like, you just got it all figured out, and then you close your eyes, and you wake up, and you don't? That doesn't even make any sense. Or some days, like, you're crabby as hell, and nothing's working out, and you go to sleep, and you wake up, and all of a sudden, you're feeling, like, amazing. Like, you know, sleep does some weird things. Like, sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you can go to bed in a good mood and wake up grumpy. Like, you just don't really know. But I do think that controlling, you know, your thoughts as much as possible, and for some people, it's really easy. Like, I think real simple people have a real simple time. Like, they don't really overcomplicate things. They don't overthink things. They don't, you know, they don't take things to these deep levels of just, you know, trying to find understanding and, you know, knowledge and apply this wisdom that we learn, you know, to our lives. Like, sometimes the more simple you are, the happier you are. But if you're listening to this, you've probably already went down these rabbit holes, and, you know, you're just on a different level. And since you're already here, you want to know more, right? So here we go. We're going to talk about how thoughts become things. Because as far back as I can remember, and until I was a young adult, I used to think that everyone knew something I didn't. I felt like the perennial outsider. They like me. Weren't afraid, aware of it, but what it was, but and they didn't seem to notice that I was without it. But to me, the difference was painful. Life's little things seem second nature to others, whereas I felt like I had to fake that I knew what was going on. I felt awkwardly different, which led to an overwhelmingly desire to question what most people seem to take for granted. A desire to know what this life is about. So in the beginning, my search for answers revolved around the issues of life, death, and the powers of the mind. But from the search arose the intriguing mysteries concerning time, space, heaven, hell, hypnosis, UFOs, ghosts, ESP, the dream state, reincarnation, and the like. So early on, I had drawn basic conclusions that explained each mystery, but they were just hunches. For example, I remember telling my mother when I was about 13 that time and space couldn't really exist as we've defined them, and that neither could hell or a god that wasn't one with all things, living and innate. My sense was that he or she, or whatever, was not just inside us all, but that no part of our experience could ever be anything less than 100% God. And I didn't realize it at the time, but my desire to know had put me on an inner path towards understanding my thinking was beginning to attract similar thinking. It was as if my questions were slowly answering themselves, opening my eyes to the insights that I now know are talent within each of us. As I walked this path of seeking the questions, I dwelled upon where someone somehow answered. Like, I was never sure just when my answers had arrived. I only seemed sometimes after illumination on the subject that an intuitive knowing had been imparted when I wasn't paying close attention. You know, the point of my sharing this is to reveal that the answers I was receiving came from within, which is exactly where your answers reside as well. I was raised Catholic, baptized and confirmed, but I found many of the teachings, rules, and rituals contradictory, and more importantly, inconsistent with the conclusions that I had intuitively deduced. I've always believed, for example, that each of us is really doing his or her best, giving our own understandings, misunderstandings, and upbringings. Therefore, if divine judgment were to be passed on a life, and I don't believe it is, sin could only ever be regarded as an honest mistake, you know, caused by deeply misunderstanding the nature of our reality, not a detriment system, a demerit system that leads to eternal damnation. Wouldn't a loving father, I reasoned, have more compassion than to seek revenge on his comparatively feeble children who were temporarily blinded by the illusions of time and space? I mean, even human parents are far more understanding of their own flesh and blood than the father portrayed in most religions. Sin and its past and present connotations, like, must have been term derived by man, I concluded, not by understanding all-knowing God. Then and now, I believe that our so-called sins should simply serve as us as teachers, not as tormentors. So, while raised amidst traditional religious views, I also needed explanations that made sense. And just as importantly, I've always believed such explanations were attainable. Rather than simply dismissing what didn't make sense to me about my Catholic upbringings, I looked for similarities between what they taught and what I felt, deduced or rationally understood. And once my bucket was full, I looked beyond religion and into myself and to begin drawing conclusions about life, dreams, and happiness. So, for example, I believe that Jesus was here to tell us, as many other wise teachers have, that we are all children of God. Yeah, Jesus taught that we all can do things he did. Believe and you shall receive. Knock and it will be answered on earth as it is in heaven. Ye are gods. I believe that there are no sins, there is no evil, and that there is no hell other than what exists in our own minds, and that Jesus came to earth to be a living example of the teachings to show a better way to his fellow travelers during dark times in his story in history, like when limiting beliefs were so ingrained in our culture that few people could even imagine expanding their thoughts and thereby their world. This kind of thinking isn't new. The conclusions I've drawn parallel truths that have been shared by different religions and spiritual philosophies as old as history, like all of which remind us of our power, magnificence, and divinity. And when we're underst when and when we understand our time and space reality from this perspective as creators ourselves, we finally begin to grasp the immense power we wield to shape our lives. In spite of feeling like an outsider throughout most of my childhood and even much of my adult life, today I feel fantastically blessed to possess my perspectives and grateful for the alienation I felt most of my life, a life that has led me to you. And because I consider myself a student and an adventurer, I believe my life's mission is remarkably similar to yours, to begin applying this wisdom of the ages to the timeless truths concerning the nature of reality so as to consciously direct and craft my own happy and fulfilling reality. Because our so-called sins should simply serve us as teachers, not as tormentors. The greatest adventure of all. I believe that you and I are presently in the middle of an adventure like no other. There's no question that life is dangerous enough to be considered an adventure. None of us know for sure if we'll even live to see another sunrise. And every single day comes loaded with its own brand new and exciting experiences. Traveling to faraway places like Cario, I'm probably saying that wrong, or Istanbul, is fascinating. But even from the comfort of your own home, there's more romance, exhilaration, and challenge in a life well lived. Adding still more to the adventure, each and every day contains an abundance of the unknown. And isn't it the unknown, the uncertainties that make an adventure an adventure? Like, we all have hopes and dreams, worries and fears, yet these all stem from the uncertainties in our lives. With just the slightest reflection, one can quickly see that it's this very uncertainty that makes it all worthwhile. If you were given a magic pen, every moment you could write down exactly what you wanted to have happen to you that day, knowing it would all happen, do you realize how miserably boring your life would become? I mean, after all, how many times could you win the lottery and still be thrilled? And in life, like, no matter where we find ourselves, Kathmandu or Nairobi, the best things are indeed free. Life's greatest pleasures are an endless list. A child's laughter, a lover's embrace, playing tug of war with your dog, swimming, listening to music, eating, hiking, watching the rain, planting a tree for Arbor Day, sitting in front of a fire, talking with friends, and they're all free. It is a wonderful life. These kinds of delights are usually sprinkled throughout the day-to-day adventures, through that mundane, right? So perhaps what makes this adventure most extraordinary is that we each have the power to conceive and achieve our own wildest dreams. After all, what would be the point of the adventure if we didn't have some control over its outcome, or if we couldn't choose the pleasures or the lessons that we've derived from it? You might argue that, you know, that because of the unknown, you can't know all the future holds. But without even reading another word in this book, you already know that you can choose to set goals and begin moving forward towards them to great effect. In life, you are the pilot or the dive master of your destiny. Every day, you get to choose the line of work you're in, the relationships you will or won't foster, and whether or not you'll embrace your disappointments to glean from them their priceless, hard-earned lessons. And these decisions, combined with our attitudes, our beliefs, and of course the use of our imagination, carry us all, you know, through all our personal journeys, and point squarely at the safaris that awaits us tomorrow. So getting your groove on. So how do you maximize your adventure through time and space? Well, two simple steps. First, you got to understand the adventure. As an analogy, you wouldn't try to drive a car until you first understood how it operates in the rules of the road, right? And secondly, begin living the adventure, like to draw from the same analogy. Once you've learned about the car and the road, it still remains up to you to get into it and to the driver's seat and turn the key and put it in gear and go, right? In other words, apply your understandings, which is, you know, as I said earlier, is what you and I now have in common as the mission of our lives. Amazingly, most people seem to think that just because they're alive, they automatically know all there is to know about living. People just don't stop to think that there might be a little more than they already know. And it hasn't occurred to them that things might not be as they seem. And they're not, fortunately. I mean, like, it only takes a little new thinking to begin seeing things as they really are and to radically change everything. And when it comes right down to it, could anything be easier than thinking? Like, and what could be more rewarding? After all, isn't every major breakthrough, discovery, or personal revelation only a thought away? I mean, in fact, the next shocking invention that changes the course of our civilizations does not lie far off in the future. It isn't a million or billion dollars away, or a person or a corporation away. It exists just a thought away. From right here, right and now. It's just a thought away from the thoughts that we now entertain, the very thoughts you are now thinking. For instance, first came to the thought that people should be able to travel through the air, and then that became a reality, right? Aviation. First came the thought that electrical energies should be manageable, and then came the reality of electricity. And first came the thoughts such as falling in love, buying a home, landing a job, and then click, 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 the dreams just start coming true. Actually, with much of the world still in survival mode, even right here in the United States, it's both forgivable and understandable that more people haven't extended, you know, a little new thinking to, you know, the experiences that we share and end up taking for granted. Yet times are swiftly changing, and as the world is about to discover, the truth about our power has been just beneath our noses since the dawn of time. So be careful what you wish for. You ever heard that? You ever heard someone say, be careful what you wish for? Because you might just get it. And I'll bet you have. We all have. And You know what else? I bet you believe it's true, or at least you do to some degree, don't you? But how or why could it be true? Have you thought about that? What mysterious principle might be at play here that could turn a wish into reality? I mean, you're probably not superstitious, so what is it? What's the reason you believe this may work? I mean, you've likely heard about the power of positive thinking and the new buzzwords like thanks largely to the best-selling DVD and book The Secret, but the law of attraction, right? But have you ever stopped to wonder what powers positive thinking or the law of attraction, something does? And I'm sure you've heard about the art of visualization too. You've probably even tried it, and maybe you've got some great stories to tell, about its success. But have you ever stopped to wonder how or why it works? All of these concepts pretty much say the same thing, but why do people on every continent believe in them without ever questioning the logistics? Something going on here? Something big? Really big. Like my mother likes to say, where there's smoke, there's fire. And that's what's going on here in such a magnitude that flames dwarfs any other fire ever known to humankind. But just what is it that's going on? And if there is something, wouldn't it be worth some digging and, some new thinking to uncover it and understand it? And then harness it, right? Wouldn't the effort warrant virtually any sacrifice or commitment? You bet it would. So check it out. Thoughts become things in three short, life-changing, never-to-be-forgotten words. The answer to what's going on and to what you've been missing is thoughts become things. That's it. Thoughts become things. This is the underlying principle that turns a wish into reality. It's what powers positive thinking and gives rise to the law of attraction. And it's why visualization works. Thoughts become things is the reason dreams and nightmares come true. Because the thoughts we think literally become the things and events in our lives. The principles, it is immutable and is as reliable as gravity itself. Not just sometimes, but all the time. And not just with our positive thoughts, but with the other ones too. In fact, we can't ever turn it off. All of this is awesome news because every time and every day, we get to choose just what we will think. Of course, our words and our actions are also supremely important, and much will be said about each, in the chapters that follow, but yet both are nothing more than the extension of our thoughts. Our words and our actions are merely our thoughts given wings. Other thoughts are where everything begins. With this principle, you can bring virtually anything you can imagine into your life, and it's not just limited to attracting material things. You can also imagine more love, more joy, and more laughter. Our lives evidence that, thoughts actually have properties like that those that belong to material element to any material element, and such properties like it gives rise to the principles and the laws. It's just that these properties until recently, have escaped our observations of our scientists, engineers, and even most philosophers, because they're obviously invisible to our physical sensory perception. And the typical tools of observation, fortunately for those who need scientific proof, quantum science is now picking up where Albert Einstein left off.
When you hear this sound, turn the page.
In explaining the properties of thoughts and the effects the observer has on his or her experiments, but without scientific proof, in the simplest of terms, there is no one who can deny that thoughts exist. And for anything to exist, mustn't it have principles, traits, and characteristics? My message, and that of countless teachings throughout the ages, through each in their own words, is that once a thought is thought, it's as if it's instantaneously endowed with its own proper and will to become physical, or just as miraculously to become attracting its nearest equivalent, hence the law of attraction. So it's as if it's given a single solitary mission to manifest into its thinker's life within no time and space. So, you know, if you think thoughts of material things, your thoughts will become those material things. And if you think thoughts of evidence and circumstances, your thoughts will rearrange the players and the props of your life, predisposing you to those events and circumstances. The only mitigating factors are your other thoughts, which can take on a variety of shades, you know, which are typically referred to as your beliefs, expectations, anticipations, and intentions, just to name a few. But if you think thoughts of love or hate or of other emotions, your thoughts will shift around the material circumstances of your life so that you will experience those thoughts of emotions over and over again. The caveats, you know, here are some of the attributes of the principles you should be aware of. And it doesn't matter what your thoughts are, or whether they serve you or not, or whether they're good or not, or whether they're fair or not. Thoughts vis-a-vis the principles are like, they're like gravity, in that they don't discern or judge what you're thinking. They just exist. It's kind of like a Google search engine, right? You know, it doesn't care what you put into it. It just pops up and, you know, simulates whatever you're looking for. So it's up to us to choose our thoughts wisely. And as creators, thinking is literally our only point of influence on the world and life's magic. Contrary to the views we've inherited as children, such as a thought, it's just a thought, abstract or ethereal. I mean, what's real is a chair, the table, the food on your plate. You know, it turns out that the opposite is true. If you know anything about magic, just realize, like, to everyone else, everything is real, but to the magician, nothing is real. You know, our thoughts are what is real. You know, and they're the starting point of what will all become tangible in our lives, pre-matter, if you will, while the things of time and space are the reflection of what has previously been thought individually, and in mass, like, and are little more than a mirage. You know, accordingly, nothing plays a greater role in how we construct our fortunes and misfortunes than the thoughts we choose to think. So when it comes to our thoughts about other people, we can miraculously attract those who possess similar thoughts and complementary dreams, potential partners in love or business, clients, customers, and so on, with stunning accuracy and precision, while simultaneously repelling others. Seriously, I mean, we cannot, however, insist on any particular person behaving in a particular way. I mean, we simply cannot manipulate others with our thoughts, and most fortunately, I mean, nor can they manipulate us. Influence sometimes, but manipulate never. You know, the other person or people must be in alignment or agreement with our thoughts for there to be a partnership, a friendship, or even adversarial relationship. But with a cast of over 7 billion people on the planet to choose from, and, you know, the interconnectedness with them all through our innate divinity, we can always find exactly what we're looking for as long as we don't insist upon who it is. So when it comes to thinking thoughts about specific others, try this. Take them out of the picture and instead, just imagine how you want to feel or the end result of whatever it is that you really want. For instance, if you want to redirect an old lover back into your life, don't think of that person. Simply imagine the love you want to feel and share. Let your thoughts bring you in what you really want in this case, you know, because what you really want is that feeling of love with the right person. Like, you know, not a specific person, you know, and I can hear the cries and the protests already saying, you know, that it really is a specific person missing from your life, as well as the love that you shared with them. And I know how tough this shift from other to self can be, so I'll give more explanation a bit later. For now, let me just say that if you're really hung up on a particular someone, then there's something you're missing. There's something you're misunderstanding about your fabulous self, your magical world, or your infinite possibilities that remain for the happiest, most romantic years of your life. And perhaps the reason the specific person is no longer in your life or is out of your realm of influence is so that you will be led to finding the truth about what you've been misunderstanding. Clearly, the way for someone even more ideally suited to you, you know, than can, you know, can presently, you know, that you can presently imagine. So here's the good news. Whatever it is that you're missing, it's only a thought away and infinitely closer than you think, than a specific someone, or infinitely easier than for you to attain. And once you think it, look out, world, because the love you're missing will quickly flood into your life again, unlike anything you felt before, which is exactly what you have to look forward to. So nothing plays a greater role in how we construct our fortunes and misfortunes than the thoughts, you know, that we choose to think. Let me give you an example of how to best use your thoughts in order to possibly influence a specific person. Let's say you want to improve how your child is doing in school. And the best thing you can do is to picture in your mind your child wildly happy, fulfilled, laughing, and confident, you know, which is what you're really after anyway, right? So, you know, think in those terms. Like, this is far more effective than thinking of specific things happening to or for your child, such as grades going up or seeing him or her excel in any particular endeavor. Like, what we're really after is happiness, either for ourselves or for others. And that's easy to imagine. See smiling faces, feel warm embraces, hear praise and congratulations. You know, in all these imaginings, you want to leave out the details of how something will happen. The manifestation process always works quickly and harmoniously. Just as air bubbles from the bottom of the sea always find the fastest way to the surface, unless we get in their way. So your thoughts, like the air bubbles, you know, they have their own default setting to manifest as quickly as possible, like tempered by your other thoughts. For instance, if you start off with demands such as, I'll only be truly happy when so-and-so does such-and-such, you know, you shut the door on all the other ways you could, you know, be equally happy. Surrender to the hows, even as you continue living your normal life, knocking on doors, turning over stones, but not insisting upon which doors open and which stones, you know, possess your solutions, but only upon the end result that you desire. Because the evidence, right? You know, you'd probably like, you know, a little proof that thoughts become things, right? I mean, that's easy, very easy. But since you can't see or follow a thought once it's been thought of, you have to look elsewhere for the evidence of its existence. And the best place to look is all around you. Here's some proof from my life. The first time I remember coming face to face with my thoughts becoming things was when I was 9 years old taking a horseback riding lesson in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Though I didn't understand then just what was going on, my mother used to take my sister and me to a riding class every weekend, where we'd learn to post, trot, and canter. You know, and after 6 weeks of classes, we had our first horse show. To this very day, I can remember vividly how the judges lined us up, six young competitors on our ponies in the middle of the ring. before announcing who had won the show. Upon hearing my name called out first, I was so excited that I almost fell off the little steed, you know, until I realized it was because I had just won the green ribbon for having placed 6 out of 6. Well, I was resilient and I kept riding. Actually, you know, I think it was because my mom made me keep riding. But, and before long, you know, our school horse show, you know, neared. And this time I asked my mom, you know, how do I win, Mom? I want to win. And she replied, Mike, do 3 things. First, ride your heels down. You know, ride with your heels down. Second, ride with your shoulders back. And third, every night before you go to bed, pray and ask God to help you to do your best. What a great way to put it. I was psyched. You know, the guru of my life had spoken and told me all I had to do to win. And I remembered that during the week that preceded the second show, I actually looked forward each day to the evening when I could have my conversation with God about winning. And on show day, I did, going from worst to first in my little class of riders. Now, I don't like to brag, obviously, but ever since then, I've won a lot more blue ribbons, literally and figuratively, in a wide variety of endeavors. Yet today, when I look back at the 1 week preceding the second horse show, I realize that something else happened every single night during my conversations with God. Something I now believe made all the difference. During my 5 or 10 minute prayers, I was thinking thoughts of victory. I could see the blue ribbon in my mind's eye, not the green one. You know, I could hear my name being called last, not first. I imagined myself receiving the trophy with the little horsey on top. Every night, I was intently visualizing and thinking about winning, and those thoughts came to pass. So the next time I knowingly encountered this principle of thoughts become things came shortly after graduating from college. I had been hired by Price Waterhouse, PW, now Price Waterhouse Coopers, which at the time was considered the Tiffany's of what used to be the Big Eight accounting firms, and to this day, a famous, highly regarded worldwide operation. Unfortunately for me, my first 3 months with PW were a nightmare. I couldn't do anything right. Like, everything I touched seemed to unravel. I was a walking disaster. And in that short time, I had accumulated 5 or 6 elevations for each of the major corporate audits. And I had work done. The gist of each was the same. Mike Dooley must improve. You know, and I don't think I can actually convey to you what an awful episode in my life that was. I was fraught with fear from morning to night and that I would be fired from my job in the real world. You know, a job that had taken months of pounding the pavement to get, and a job that I had made sure that everyone I had ever known knew I had. I remember coming home one day, and I was still living with my mother at the time, you know, and walking into the living room and telling my mom with absolute certainty that I was going to get fired. Now, by this time in my life, you know, I was already onto the idea of my thoughts become things, and yet it wasn't until I heard myself say, Mom, I'm going to get fired. I know I'm going to get fired. That was the proverbial light that went on. Suddenly, you know, I realized the dire thoughts I'd been thinking virtually nonstop over the last few months, thoughts that were only making matters much worse. So I immediately went into the living room couch, laid down, closed my eyes, and began visualizing. Now, this may sound too difficult, but when you're a bad auditor, you know, just how do you imagine yourself behaving as a good auditor? I mean, after all, a bad auditor doesn't know what a good auditor does, or he wouldn't be a bad auditor. Well, here's what I was visualizing. And it is what you can visualize whenever you don't know how to achieve an end result. I simply thought, you know, exclusively on the end result, not giving one moment thought, moments thought to how I would get there. I didn't close my eyes and see myself performing audits. I didn't know how to perform. Instead, I saw myself waking up, walking up and down the hallways of PW, becoming beaming with joy, thrilled to be alive, and happy to be at work. I saw myself saying hi to all my partners and staff, and in my mind's eye, I saw them actually saying hi back to me, which at that time wasn't happening. From that day on, and as soon as I got home from work each day, I did my little visualization exercise. 3 weeks later, the phone in the office staff area rang. Even though there were 15 of us working as entry-level audit staffers, you know, I knew the call was for me because I was the only one not assigned to an audit team out of, you know, out in the field. And not only was the call for me, but it was from the head of the human resources. And, it, you know, as sweat beaded, you know, on my forehead and my heart began pounding, you know, he told me that the firm's tax department was shorthanded going into the busiest season of the year, and that with some hesitation, he added that the audit department wouldn't mind loaning me to the tax department. No, this wasn't good news. Like all new auditors, the tax department, you know, struck me as a terrifying, complex place, a whole other world. But I had no choice. I was loaned to the tax department. Yet, in what seemed like no time at all, I was waking up and in walking up and down the hallways of PW, just beaming with joy. It turned out that the tax department loved me, and I loved being in the tax department. My short-term loan became a permanent transfer, and from that day forward, my career at PW took off. I simply thought exclusively on the end result, not giving one moment's thought to how I would get there. And finally, no longer under the guillotine of fear, you know, that I would be fired from my job in the real world, you know, I was at last able to start thinking thoughts about thriving instead of just surviving. And one of the things that I did back then to help me think thoughts about thriving was create a little scrapbook to help me visualize every conceivable detail of my dreamed of life. Very simply, I took some blank white sheets of copy machine paper, compliments of PW, no doubt, and on each page, I pasted a photograph of something I wanted, usually, you know, cut from an advertisement in magazines. The photos included fancy watches, nice homes, condominiums, expensive cars, and international destinations such as London, Paris, Hong Kong, and Tokyo. Traveling abroad was actually one of my long-range goals, mainly because I had no reason to believe I could do it as a young man fresh out of college, but I figured that since, you know, I was crafting my dream life, I might as well include it all. Wow, was I wrong, completely underestimating the incredible power of thought, because dreams do come true. And 10 months later, while attending a PW training session in Reston, Virginia, I learned for the first time that every year the firm offered a few foreign assignments to select individuals. This session was at the very end of November that year, and just a few days later before Thanksgiving. 6 weeks later, just after the start of the new year, I was based and living in the sunny capital city of Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Now, this may not sound like a dream come true to you, as I have to admit that I hadn't pasted any photos of the Middle East into my scrapbook, nor had I ever heard of Riyadh 6 weeks before calling it home. But I had been visualizing the end result. I was after my dreamed of life. And looking back, I don't think anything else, you know, I didn't think of anything else. All other things considered could have gotten me there quicker. But during my stay in Saudi Arabia, I accumulated enough vacation, banked overtime, and floating holidays to have 3 months of paid time off. Plus, the assignment included hardship pay and an airfare allowance for home leave every 6 months, which I could, you know, use to go anywhere in the world that I want. That I wanted. So I traveled around the world twice. visiting every city and country on the planet that I had ever dreamed of in Africa, Asia, and the South Seas. And my heart nearly missed a beat one morning while having breakfast at the Regent Hotel in Nolan, Hong Kong. Obviously, in one moment, thunderstruck. In the next, looking up from my coffee through a two-story plate glass window that surrounded me, suddenly I recognized I was sitting in the front of the exact same view of Hong Kong Island that I had cut and pasted into my little scrapbook just 2 years earlier. So when my tour of duty in the Middle East was finished, I received my first choice city for reparation. And I bought a really cool condo in downtown Boston. And I walked through Faneuil Hall, whatever that is, but to and from work every day. Listen, 18 months later, upon receiving notice of my impending promotion to manager, a distinction revered second only to becoming partner. So I decided to move on and follow another dream, but to become an entrepreneur. The only problem was that I had no idea how to become an entrepreneur or what my business would offer. My job or job is first and foremost to simply define the dream, specify the end result in every tangible detail. And holy cow. So I got a little bit more to read here. Let's go through it, huh? Because fortunately, like, my life's lessons by the time had clearly shown me that in order to make a dream come true, you don't have to know how it will come true. That, in fact, the hows and the domain of the universe. Like, my job or our job is first and foremost to simply define the dream, specifically the end result, in every imaginable detail. So I defined my dream of running my own company, quit PW, sold my condo, moved to Orlando, Florida. Within a few months, I teamed up with my brother, a graphic artist, and my mother, who's very cool, and we launched TUT Enterprises, Inc. Totally unique t-shirts, and over the next 10 years, the three of us sold over 1 million of them. I could burn through the next 11 chapters telling you more stories and adventures and misadventures, you know, that were all preceded by my thoughts, and still not tell you everything. But you know who else, you know, could do that, don't you? You. Because whether or not you know about the principles doesn't affect how well it works. Your thoughts have always become the things of your life, and you're doing it right now, and you're going to continue doing it for as long as you think them. But maybe, rather than looking at your own life for proof, because sometimes we're not always as objective with ourselves as we'd like to be, look around at the lives of your friends, family members, coworkers, and neighbors, and see the evidence of how their fortunes and misfortunes parallel their thinking. And while you're thinking of other people, think of the ones who currently live in wealth and abundance. If you don't know many wealthy people, think of celebrities or media personalities, rock stars, actors, sales legends, you know, and ask yourself, what one thing, you know, do they all have in common besides cash? You know, did they all go to Harvard? Did they all get an MBA? You know, I doubt it. Many of my wealthy friends were lucky to finish high school, where they all were born. Were they all born in the wealthy, you know, well-connected families? Hardly. Like, at least not the ones I know. Were they all blessed with high IQs, either intellectually or emotionally? Oh, please, come on. We all know a lot of dumb rich people, right? I mean, you all have to do. All you have to do is turn on your television to see them. So what then? You know, what one thing besides cash do they all have in common? At a minimum, they all believe that it could happen to them. And once you believe something, whether justified or not, right or wrong, you cannot help but think thoughts along the lines of your beliefs. Our thoughts mirror our beliefs, which, you know, we'll talk more about later. Once your thoughts you've thought thoughts, what happens next? Well, they strive to become the things and events of your life. It's the law. So now think of the wealthy people you know who possess, you know, perhaps half or less than half of your intelligence, charm, and good looks. And I'm sure you can think of someone, or at least who can, you know, earn at least double your salary each year, you know, and ask yourself, why, you know, how could this be? Aren't we all made of the same stuff? Flesh and bone, beating hearts, and, you know, coursing red blood. Like, in fact, there's absolutely nothing different between you and those you think about, nor is there anything different between you and me. We're all exactly the same, except for one thing, our thoughts. One life can go this way and another that way. And in the end, won't it always be because of the different thoughts each person chose? You know, I expect that you're mostly on board, perhaps thinking, yeah, it's true. I can buy that. Thoughts do become things. You know, attitude is everything, and we make our own reality. And I've always been a positive person. But I don't think I can, you get it, not yet, because I don't think you can yet fathom that there is never any exception to these principles. You know, thoughts become things. There are no mitigating factors. There are no excuses. Your thoughts account for every wonderful and difficult thing that has ever happened to you. In fact, your thoughts are the only reason that anything has ever happened or not happened in your life. So I suggest you start removing any doubt. And I realize it may sound extreme and even hardcore, but I'm deliberately pushing you to your limit. I want you to reach the end of your ability to comprehend this principle and force you to admit that you've got some issues with it. Why? Because by facing our issues, whatever they are, we can blast through them and better understand the truth. Life is knowable. Your questions have answers, but only if you know enough to ask them. Then, by fully understanding this principle, we can then put it to use without doubting ourselves or thinking that perhaps there are other forces at play that might undermine our efforts. So unless you previously dwelled on the principles as an absolute, there are very likely two major obstacles to prevent you from fully comprehending that it's your thoughts that entirely create your reality. So why haven't I won the lottery yet then, right? Okay, well, you could fairly ask, you know, well, Mike, if thoughts become things, is as predictable as gravity, then what about those dreams of ours that have never seen the light of day? Like, why haven't I won the lottery yet? The first objection then is that there have been things you've wanted in your life, things you've badly wanted, things you've perhaps thought about for months or even years on end that never came to pass. The answer is very simple. We never want just one thing, do we? Nor do we ever think just one thought. In fact, scientists now tell us that each and every day of our lives, we can think more than like 60,000 unique thoughts. Well, whenever we're thinking this many thoughts, isn't there a possibility, like even a great likelihood, that some of our thoughts may contradict one another or even be, you know, mutually exclusive? For example, you might yearn to be in the top spot on the corporate ladder, thinking about it for months and months out, you know, year in and year out, visualizing the corner office, imagining yourself, you know, making big decisions and marshaling the troops. But if at the same time you're thinking these kinds of thoughts, you also come home from work each day and greet your spouse with, "No one at work has any idea how valuable I really am," or "No one at work truly appreciates, you know, the differences I could make," and, you know, then those thoughts must also do what all thoughts do, and they strive to become a part of your reality. So the person who thinks he's underappreciated typically becomes underappreciated. Which is not a very good place to be if you also see yourself climbing to the top of the corporate ladder. Indeed, there are subtle nuances affecting your manifestations that may lead, some outcomes to seemingly have the upper hand over the outcomes, but yet all these nuances can be summed up into three words: your other thoughts. And in these other thoughts on life, people, and happiness, perhaps received more repetition when backed with greater feelings and more expectations, or were acted upon, more than our thoughts that have not yet manifested. To give you another example, let's say that you now regularly visualize living in wealth and abundance, imagining yourself living in a big house, driving a fancy car, and traveling the world in style. Yet, if all your life, and still to this day, you believed a thought, whether you realize it or not, that people with money are not spiritual people, or that money means big problems, well, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Money is either wonderful and good, and you want some, or it's bad and evil, and you want to avoid it. Entertaining thoughts from both camps can put you somewhere in the middle, simply stagnating, with neither too much nor too little. And so you see, it's possible that your thoughts may conflict with one another without you even being aware of it. And I'll talk more about how to pin down your thoughts and get focused later, but the point right now is that it's because of such conflicts that there have never been that there have been, times in your life that you did not get what you wanted. Nevertheless, the thoughts that did win out were also yours. The lesson here is that just because you haven't always received what you most wanted doesn't mean that you didn't get what you were thinking about. The reason some of your thoughts have not yet come to pass is because other thoughts of yours have, and they got in the way. So whose thoughts were those, right? A second major obstacle, living likely preventing you from fully understanding that your thoughts become things, comes from the fact that throughout your life there have been unexpected things that you did get, experiences you've had, some pleasant and some others sworn to secrecy, that you never ever thought about ahead of time, nor you might want to talk to want to nor now you might want to ask, well, Mike Dooley, if thoughts become things is as predictable as gravity, then whose thoughts were those? Well, here's some examples of how this works. I like to visit South Beach, Miami, for short weekend getaways. I love the energy in Miami, its emerging culture and its diverse people. And for me, Orlando is, point A, my present location, and Miami's point B, the goal, the end result, the destination I'm thinking about. Well, for me to get from point A to point B, there must be a journey, and the journey will inevitably be made up of some unthought of territory, such as whether or not the traffic will cooperate, or where the turnpike, may be under construction or and detoured, or, where I'll stop, for rest or gas, and what smiling or frowning faces I'll see in the cars I pass or that pass me. Yet all these, unthought of experiences in my journey are necessary in order to get me to my destination at the same, and the same kind of unthought of experiences occur on journeys set into motion, whenever we think new thoughts. And whenever you think new thoughts, it has to deal with where you currently are in your life in order to take you wherever, your thinking lies, and to get you from point A to point B. You'll very often have to be drawn through unthought of territory, which is not to imply that absolutely anything can happen on such journeys. Anything and everything that does happen would be predicted on all your other thoughts about life, people, and the journey. So, for example, let's say you're thinking thoughts about more love, joy, and laughter coming into your life. to get more or less of anything or to affect any kind of change in your life, your thoughts will need to take you on a journey through time and space, through the material world, so that circumstances can exist for the fruition of your dreams. And how might your thoughts do this? Well, you might accidentally bump into a long fast friend and renew a friendship, which in turn branches into many more friendships, and you're off. Or you might, you know, coincidentally find a stray dog or a cat that you adopt who adds immeasurably to the joy in your life for years to come. Alternatively, through a string of what appeared to be a misfortune, you might be forced to relocate to an entirely new town that you were subsequently adore. You know, you see, whenever something unexpected or unthought of falls into your path, it's always a stepping stone in the journey to a place that we've been thinking about. Because in time and space, as you well know, there are no accidents and coincidences. You know, for accidents and coincidences to exist, we'd be robbed of our power. You know, it couldn't then be said that we have dominion over all things or that we are divine, supernatural creators. You know, there'd have to be caveats for luck or mistakes or fate. You know, it would mean that we could only be co-creators of our most intimate and personal experiences. It would mean that anything could happen next in spite of our best efforts, in fact, in spite of our existence and all. Just as a chain can only be as strong as its weakest link, for a reality to exist where we might at times be without even like 0.0001% of our incredible power, it would mean at times that we would have 0% power. And even, you know, if for only a few seconds of our entire life, we might have zero power, and those seconds could randomly appear at key pivotal times or crossroads. The effect could approximate having zero power throughout, you know, our entire life, perhaps defeating the entire point of our existence. No way. Life is far too amazing, majestic, and perfect for accidents and coincidences to exist that would rob us of our freedom, glory, and power. You know, on the other end of the analytical spectrum, however, just because everything matters doesn't translate into everything has profound meaning. It all matters in a sense that every thought, word, and feeling of ours lends itself to creation. However, you know, any particular thought, such as my friend, our friends are usually late, you know, shit happens, or guys lie, you know, may or may not have a meaningful impact on your life, you know, given all the other thoughts, so, of which, you know, may contradict these statements. For example, while stubbing your toe in the night, you know, would never be an accident, neither would it necessarily have profound meaning. Its significance and meaning would depend on the, you know, confluence of all your thoughts, profound and you know, strike a light. So whenever something unexpected or unthought of falls into your path, it's always a stepping stone and a journey to a place that we have been thinking about. So I guess, you know, now it's like, where to begin, right? Where do we begin? So working with your thoughts means becoming aware of your thoughts and knowing what they are. And sometimes this can be a daunting task, particularly when you realize that all day long you're thinking away, you know, without ever really thinking about what you're thinking about. And then, you know, there are those hidden beliefs of yours, beliefs you don't even know you have, that are responsible for generating their own nearly invisible thoughts. Yikes, where to begin? So just what can you do? Your life is already filled with challenges, right? At work, at home. No matter what you do, there's always, you know, you're always dealing with the unexpected, and frankly, it's not always easy. We've all been through times where we wished we could just quit that job or relationship or walk away and never look back. But most of the time, we don't. And why? Why don't, you know, we don't because we know that no matter how challenging certain situations can be, their rewards or their anticipated upside, we're seeing them through our greater. We know that if we at least do what we can, things will get better. And they always do. And the same is true when it comes to working with your thoughts. Just do it. You do what you can. Visualization, I mean pictures or feelings in your mind. You know, if you can begin to grasp that your world does indeed revolve around the thoughts that you choose, then it becomes a no-brainer to realize that, you know, at least sometimes, preferably daily, it would be helpful to deliberately think, you know, the kinds of thoughts that you'd like to experience. I recommend starting with visualization. Like, as anyone can set aside 5 minutes a day to visualize, and it doesn't cost a thing. Here are four rules that I follow, you know, that help me visualize. So don't overdo it. Never visualize for more than 5 minutes at a time, because it's too easy to start daydreaming and get sidetracked. And if you try to do it any longer, you know, so it's just better to have, you know, an intense 5 minutes than a poor 15 or 30 minutes. Quality is far more important than quantity. And when I visualized 5 minutes a day without turning around, you know, my career at PW, that 5 minutes was, you know, was up against all day long worrying and fretting about getting fired, yet, you know, it won out. The reasons, you know, those 5 minutes prevailed despite the huge imbalance is because of our natural inclination to succeed. There's more about this that in chapter 6, but magical universe, but, you know, which makes visualizing all that more powerful. But two, you know, the next thing you can do is be gentle with yourself. Go easy and have patience. Don't get mad at yourself if you find, you know, your thoughts turning negative, or if you find that, you know, sometimes, you know, worrying throughout the day, find yourself worrying throughout the day. Like, I know what it's like when you're driving down the road having an argument with someone in your mind and you're worried, you know, that things aren't going as well as you'd like at work or at home. But when you start becoming aware of your thinking, you'll start catching yourself a lot more often with, you know, some pretty surprising thoughts. And this can even happen while you visualize. And that's okay. But, you know, at least you're becoming aware in ways that you've never were before. You know, and this is a great starting point. Even when I was visualizing happily walking up and down the hallways at PW, I would still catch myself worrying about getting fired. What did I do? Well, what could I do? You know, I just did what I could, and I pressed on with my visualizing and did my best. And that was enough, honestly. Feel the joy. If you want to really energize and supercharge your thoughts and emotions to them, because not all thoughts are the same, like, true, like, they all strive to become things, but apart from that, thoughts have different intensity levels. Emotion is what turns up the volume. Like, emotion is pure power, and when combined with visualizing, you know, makes things happen a whole lot faster. Feel the emotions related with whatever it is that you want. Feel the excitement, the joy, the pleasure, the victory, or whatever it is that will accompany your thoughts manifestation. Audience members often ask me, you know, what they should do if they're unable to see images in their mind's eye. I tell them not to worry, as they've perhaps even, you know, at an advantage. You know, I tell them to drop their images and you know, entirely in exchange for clarity on the feelings they wish to feel. The more you can feel the joy, the faster the physical details of your life will fall into place, yielding your manifestation. And four, like, don't visualize more than once or twice a day. First of all, your life and happiness springs from the present, not the future. And by dwelling on too much of your hopes for tomorrow, you could easily begin taking for granted all that you already have. to be happy for, happy about. You know, and secondly, if you dwell too much on your dreams coming true, you may become more and more aware or conscious of the difference between where you are today and where you want to go. The distance between where you are now and where you want to be may be, seem overwhelming, and you may begin to doubt yourself, lose confidence, and quit visualizing altogether. So, what would you wish for? This principle of thought become thoughts become things is, you know, is the be-all and the end-all of how to live the life of your dreams. It's really the only rule that matters, and understanding its existence is the first step of mastering your life and living your dreams. You don't have to understand how it really works. You just have to understand that it does work. Unfailingly, never lose sight of that and never let go. Like, as you keep this understanding in your forefront of your mind, proof of existence will surface in your life, and you will realize that it's been there all along. Emotion is pure power, and when combined with visualizing, it makes things happen a whole lot faster. Your awareness of this principle, substantiated with our own evidence that it works, will empower you. You'll believe yourself and in your inherent ability to deliberately change the course of your life. You'll pursue your dreams with a greater confidence that you have ever, and a greater confidence than you've ever felt before. Why? Because you'll understand the number one requirement for the realization is to simply that you dream them. You know, what could be easier than that? Now, before this chapter ends, I want to ask you a question, and I want you to be completely selfish when you answer it, okay? If you could just have one wish granted, any wish, anything you could imagine, what would you wish for? What would you wish for? $1 billion? Would you wish for health? Would you wish for love? Would you wish for a million more wishes? What would you wish for? Well, if you have read carefully or listened to my voice carefully and listened real carefully, you know and truly understand that your thoughts become things in the events of your life, you know, then I know what you'd wish for. There's really only one thing that you would logically wish for. I know what you would wish for. For things to be exactly as they are now so that you could remain alive in your kingdom. That you rule with your thoughts and that you choose to think, and where you have indeed been given dominion over all things, right? Because you now understand that living as a creation among your own creations, as we do here in the jungles of time and space, is as good as it gets. Thoughts become things. There is no preconditions. There is no hidden agenda. And there are no unknown variables working against you in this Garden of Eden, this paradise among paradises, where each of us is indeed masters of our destiny. Wow, we got through that one. It was a long read, but thank you. And, you know, we're only 26 pages in, but thank you. Thank you for listening. I am your host, Jasper. This is Where the Sidewalk Ends. The unconventional podcast, predictably unpredictable. And damn, that felt good, you know. And I could go into lots of stories of my own about how this has all worked out for me. And maybe at some point I will. But for right now, you know, if I got anybody's attention this long, we're doing good. So, hey, I had to piece this together too, by the way, because this recording thing glitched out on me a few times. But, you know. So it's a chunk of time, and that's just one chapter, so I'm going to release it, you know? Anyway, have a wonderful day after Christmas, December 26th. I better get my butt to bed. I got to work in the morning, and yeah, all that good stuff. Why? Why do I got to work in the morning? Because you guys aren't subscribing. I need more subscribers. It's all good. Do what you want to do. Have a wonderful day. Namaste.
eventually see through the veils to how things really are. You will keep saying again and again, this is certainly not like we thought it was.
I mean, I think sometimes people, they confuse what I'm doing. I write about life, I write about things that I'm actually dealing with, something that I'm actually experiencing. This is real for me. Like, this is something that personally helps me as well. I'm not confused about who gave me the gift. God gave me the gift, and he gave me the ability to do this, and he also gave me this as an outlet. And that's what music is for me. When I feel something, whether it's anger, it's a passion about something, a frustration, like, this is where I go. That's the whole NF Real Music thing, man. This is real for me. I need this. This is a therapy for me.
Window and pretend that I was flying.